This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
The Blue Cliff Record, Case 45. A monk asked Joshu, "The myriad things return to the One. Where does the One return to?" Joshu replied, "Once when I lived in the province of Say, I made a cloth shirt for myself. It weighed 7 pounds. This morning, I opened Sesshin by saying that voices in the hall, barking of dogs, traffic, sounds of the street are all just sounds. And that our fantasies, our judgments and opinions, our daydreams, hopes and dreads are all just thoughts. And that all the sounds and all the thoughts are just this. So this way of perceiving things is what's meant by the myriad things returning to the One. We start with all these particular things that are intruding and annoying and that are out of our control, that are buzzing around in the world or buzzing around in our head. And we have a practice, whether it's labeling thoughts, seeing them, whatever they are, as thinking, or just being all ears and transparent to sounds without any particular judgment. All these ways of sitting with phenomena lead to a kind of de-differentiation, right? It's what happens when we sit with mu. Everything that we think, everything that we feel, everything that we hear, all just becomes mu. Right? It all, everything is funneled into it. Yeah. Everything, no matter what its content, just gets wrapped up in this one repetitive sound, this, like a mantra that it just absorbs everything, right? And when we say that all the sounds and all the thoughts are just this, everything comes down to this moment of undifferentiated immediacy. Now, another name for undifferentiated immediacy is the absolute. Right? It is where we are aware simply of the thingness of things, the presence, existence, the being, right? That things are, not that what they are, right? And if we are focused simply on the fact that something is, that moment of being is complete and perfect in the sense that an object perfectly and completely fills the space allotted to it, right? Now, this is the way we need to practice in the beginning. And that beginning, you know, is anywhere from a year to a decade to a lifetime. It's the practice that Joko taught of labeling, and which she said kept bringing you back to everything, including what we consider to be psychological issues, feelings, emotional reactions, all as the absolute, all just this, one thing after another, just happening. When we do that, we stop being buffeted around by them all in the same kind of way. In a certain sense, we allow ourselves to simply be present to the immediacy of experience, regardless of contact, of content. And in that immediacy, there's no good and bad or right or wrong or judgment. There's just what's happening in that moment. And as I say, it has a certain kind of perfection in its immediacy. So to practice that way can be enormously stabilizing. And it's, we can feel that all those things that were buzzing around and making us nuts suddenly are able to be contained or calmed down or centered, right? But that's where it gets complicated. When we quiet down, when it seems that our thoughts have stilled, if we manage to be in a place for a little while where no one's talking, there's no distracting noises, maybe in the city, maybe we've gone to a monastery, and we feel like we're experiencing silence. And we can think that silence, whether it's in our heads or in the world, is something that we want to cultivate or hold on to, that it's a state that we like, and we want more of. But there is no such thing as silence in itself. Silence is the absence of other things. You can't bottle the silence. You can't have silence as its own substance. Silence is just sort of a remainder when other things are subtracted. And that's what Joko said about enlightenment. She said, enlightenment isn't something. It's the absence of something. And it's the absence of a certain kind of equivalent of noise, a certain kind of noise of self-centeredness, an attempt to judge or control or organize. And the absence of that, when we first encounter it, can be quite remarkable, the same way silence can be quite remarkable if we suddenly encounter it after a lot of intrusive noise. And yet we forget that enlightenment is not a thing or a state. It's simply everything being the way it is without something being added onto it. Now, something even more subtly pernicious happens if you happen to be philosophically inclined, when we start talking about the absolute and the absolute as undifferentiated immediacy or being. The dangerous thing that happens is that we start pulling out capital letters and being gets capitalized, the way enlightenment can get capitalized. Or oneness can get capitalized, or emptiness capitalized. We think in a certain kind of almost irresistible way that being is an additional quality that objects have. So that in addition to being, made of wood, being hard, being a certain size and something else, it also has being. As if the floor, if we subtracted what it's made of, somehow there'd be this other remainder of being, as if it was also a quality or substance, in some sense, behind or giving rise to the object. Now, part of what Buddha meant by things being empty is that they have no fixed essential nature and that there's nothing behind the scenes giving rise to them. That they are all constantly, moment by moment, being recreated by interdependent circumstances and causality. But it's very tempting when we encounter the absolute to put a capital letter on it and think it's a something that we've encountered. And like I say, if you're philosophically minded in a certain way, like Hegel with the Geist or Heidegger with being, you're inclined to see this great metaphysical abstraction behind the scenes playing itself out, unfolding and being the cause of the world of appearances, with this being the transcendental reality behind the scenes. Now Zen recognizes this as a particular kind of sickness that we are liable to. And it is the disease that Joshu's answer is intended to cure. You see, when we encounter the undifferentiated, when we see things as just sound, just thought, just the oneness of the world, the whole thing, one inseparable whole, or the immediacy of just this, we will have experienced something very relieving and very intoxicating. And we have to, in some way, be reminded that this abstraction that we've encountered and created for ourselves is really nothing but all those myriad things in the first place. So when Joshua is asked, all the myriad things return to the one, where does the one return to? See, it has to return to the myriad things. It has to go back into differentiation if we're not going to get stuck up in the sky of some kind of abstraction. We have to see the immediacy or perfection in things themselves, right? That the quality of perfect immediacy is not a property of the absolute, it's a property of the table I'm banging, right? It's a property of things themselves. It's a property of how, of a way of being in the world. It's not that we've encountered another world. It's not that we've peeked behind a curtain. But we're now in a certain kind of relationship to the world and to ourselves. In some way, like Joko says, not enlightenment. We haven't discovered anything, we haven't added anything on, we haven't gotten anything. We've subtracted something, and the something is really all about subtracting this idea of getting, discovering, controlling, having, right, being in touch with. That's what we've gotten rid of. All that add-on that we thought was spirituality. We've subtracted it and are actually back in immediate touch with our life as it is. Where does the one return to? Years ago, I made a cloth shirt, weighed 7 pounds. 7 pound shirt would be very heavy, right? I have a feeling that there might be a certain ironic allusion to how we can be weighed down by abstraction, weighed down by a philosophical attachment to things like oneness. Where does the one return to? When I lived in the province of Say, I made a cloth shirt. It weighed 7 pounds. Do you now understand Joshua's answer?